The following oral history program on the Texas Rangers, then, now, and in the future, was taped by Jerome F. Wyman with permission of Jerome H. Price, former Texas Ranger, now residing in Floresville, who addressed the members of the San Antonio Kiwanis Club, June 23, 1995. Today, we are paying tribute to the Texas Rangers. It is a long overdue recognition of the past and present Ranger lore. These men were neither soldiers nor state police, but somewhere in between. They have served Texas for 160 years officially. But before we introduce Ranger Price, our guest speaker today, permit me to condense a little history and expand a little bit on the recognition we plan today for the Rangers. The world's most famed and fabled lawmen grew out of a militia called Texas Minutemen. As volunteers for local defense of frontier settlers from Indian depredations, the militia switched from a static defense of people and property to a wide-ranging horse patrols or ranging companies. These were the precursors of the legendary Texas Rangers. Stephen F. Austin himself was the first to mention the name in about 1823 as he sought to protect the settlers primarily in East Texas. Sam Houston officially organized units during the Texas Revolution in 1835. Rangers would not only fight the Indians, but later the outlaws, the military, draft dodgers, deserters, racial and prison rioters, labor and civil rights strikers, bank robbers, cattle rustlers, and even those somehow on either side of Prohibition, which one old ranger, not Jerome, said that was one of his most distasteful duties dealing in the bootleg era. I don't know which side he was on, really. In their typical brand of sanctioned frontier justice, these men tracked, captured, judged, juried, and some say executed lawbreakers. Probably no single body of men has contributed as much to the mystique of the Wild West and its taming of lawlessness as have the Texas Rangers. And yet Governor Moll Ferguson tried and failed to disband the Rangers. Other politicians, some even local, have tried ever since. In 1935, Texas Rangers were combined with the State Highway Patrol. I think you'll be hearing more about that from our speaker a little bit later. Rangers have been perpetually recognized by a number of namesake counties such as Bell, Baylor, Caldwell, Callahan, Coleman, Gillespie, Hayes, McCullough, Tarrant, Terry, Walker, and others. Perhaps you know some others. Lawrence Sullivan Sol Ross lent his name to the A&M Ross Volunteers and to a state university in Alpine. The Rangers inspired Walker, Texas Ranger, a TV show, a Ford Ranger truck, Texas Rangers American League baseball team, numerous towns, canyons, springs, and children, many in this area. And did you old Niners know that Jack Hayes was a deputy surveyor in the Bear District in about 1838, and he surveyed what was later become known as Alamo Heights, Mr. Law.
Where is that?
Hayes also, by way of digression, in 1841 was attending a ball in honor of the President of the Republic, Mirabeau V. Lamar, and they were at the Uturi House. And Jack Hayes and two of his other ranger friends went over to attend the ball upon invitation. They got there, saw that the people were all dressed up. And Jack Hayes is the only one of the three that had a coat. So Jack went in first, met the hostess, danced a little bit, then he went out, disappeared. And another ranger with the same coat on and danced a little bit, went out, and third ranger did it. Finally, one of the women was wondering why Jack Hayes was only dancing every third dance. He was a young, handsome, young, unattached man, and so they invited all three of these Texas Rangers to come in, one with a coat on and two without. So I say that because we're coatless today, Jerome. Texas Rangers have a unique esprit de corps. They're not unlike U.S. Marines, FBI special agents, Scotland Yard inspectors, Royal Canadian Mounties, Texas Aggies, and ex-judges. There's a real bonding among these men. Henry Castro, founder of Castroville, wrote in his journal that the Rangers were equal to any emergency, and he compared them to the old musketeers of Louis XIV, true and chivalrous gentlemen, soldiers of France. They killed game, and they loaned and gave ammunition to settlers in Medina County. This we know. The Ranger stereotype included traits of hard riding, straight shooting. They were, some said, unvarnished. They were quiet, gentle. They were tough loners. They had a sense of humor, but it was rare among the Ranger Corps. Historians agree on three items that make up a Ranger: courage, intelligence, and character. Jerome, one out of three ain't bad. Now, the hats, the boots, the buckles, the pistols, and the coveted badge stood them apart from lesser men. I've known only two Texas Rangers in my lifetime: Zeno Smith, who wore khakis and a black hat and broke up a lot of gambling tables here in San Antonio, and Geronimo Price, who's my favorite caricature of a Texas Ranger. He's tall, he's lean, he's rugged, he always wears a clean white shirt, a black tie, and a silver Stetson. His nickname is Geronimo, and many of these men call themselves each other by their Christian or nicknames. There were names like Lefty and Skippy, and Saul and Lone Wolf and Rip and Bigfoot and Old Payne. There are only about 103 Rangers in service today. As late as 1987, in his last year as the DPS director, James Adams, former FBI official here and in Washington, and Luther Coulter, and many of you here probably knew James Adams as I did, he said that the new trooper recruits coming in to the DPS would offer to pay to be Texas Rangers, but that's not the way it worked. Jerome Price has given me a very short vita, and that vita includes the fact that he was born it's a two-part program. He was born February 29, 1924, twin sisters, Blanco County, Texas. The 1942 Brackenridge High School yearbook, La Retama, captures him as a captain of Company F, ROTC. I also know that he was on the rifle team and the drill team, because I was a company clerk in a neighboring company at the time. He's a World War II veteran in service of the U.S. Navy Air Corps from 1942 to 1946. He served a short stint at the University of Texas until 1947. After a legislative appropriation of authorizing 200 highway patrolmen, he applied. He joined the DPS as a Texas Highway Patrolman in 1948. He was appointed into the Texas Rangers Company D in 1955. He retired in 1974, but on retirement, he has held a special Texas Ranger commission in the DPS until this present day. Jerome, we're pleased to have you here, and if you want to introduce later any further your guests or anything, the program is yours. This is the program, Charlie Kenworthy.
Thank you, Jerome. I normally don't need this. My voice bounces off of the wall back there usually when I have something to say. Thank you, Jerome. And he's got his lady, Adrian, with him today. I brought my lady. I'll have to go first and say to you, I'm not a polished speaker. I'm a talker. I can talk, and you'll have to sometimes jerk my feet out of the stirrups to get me to quit. I have a very dear friend, that retired immigration border patrolman, Buck Newsom, and wrote a book called Shod with Iron. The book was Buck Newsom's daily diary of his activity as a border patrolman. And Buck had a great sense of humor. And the autographing in this book says, to silent Jerome, he can talk your right arm off and then whisper in the hole. So, like I said, I don't hold myself out as a speaker, but I enjoy being with people like you. I look around here and I see men in mine and Jerome's age group. And you men will know where I'm coming from when I say it was my 1935 childhood ambition to be a Texas Ranger someday. I fulfilled that childhood ambition, and I'm very proud of it. And over those years, well, for then, the lady. I always include this gal. Today, I've had that gal 50 years, 2 months, and 15 days. I picked her out of the Breckenridge High School, removed the purple jackets, as I called it. I picked her out of the 200 of the prettiest fillies at Breckenridge High School in 41. And then, of course, all of us got were detoured there after December 7, 41. So it took me four and a half years more in that detour to finally get loose from Naval Air Station, which was just a day down there or two, that the Navy let me have a leave that day. And I came home, and she came down from Indiana on a Greyhound bus to say I do at St. Cecilia's Church on the south end of town. So I've waltzed her across Texas several times in Highway Patrol and the Ranger Service, and we raised four wonderful kiddos. She did. She's a mother all the way, raising them while I was out tramping the state. We had two sons named Zeno, after Zeno Smith. Another son named Levi. Many of you probably remember Levi Duncan in Uvalde. To me, that man was 10 foot tall also. And our second son was named Levi. But I didn't push those boys to follow their daddy's footsteps. I let them be their own men. They both went into different fields in law enforcement. There was never a law enforcement man in my family, really, but law-abiding and strictly, my grandfather in Blanco County, I think he served on the grand jury continuously in Blanco County, my grandfather on my mother's side. And I had the pleasure as a youngster, like, I guess it's Matthew, isn't it, here, of knowing of Captain Frank Hamer personally through my grandfathers, who were both ranchers and farmers in Blanco County in those mid-30s and latter 30s. And I happened to know of Captain Hamer. And so I said, when I saw the real Bonnie and Clyde car at this youngster's age here in front of our municipal auditorium in 1935, I vowed then that someday I wanted to be a Texas Ranger. Well, I wrote the DPS was formed in 1935, that year also, and I wrote my term project at Thomas Nelson Page Junior High School in occupations, wanting to be a Texas state lawman. And after the war, when I got home in 46 from Hong Kong, China, I bided time for a while. Mr. Harry Jersey, beer had come back legally during the mid-30s, and my dad went with the breweries here and had been with Sabinas, which Mr. Hagelin built. Then in 39, it became Lone Star Brewery. Mr. Harry Jersey, which many of you men your ages, I know, knew Mr. Jersey. Mr. Jersey wanted me to go to Milwaukee and go through brewmaster school. Now, they schooled me at every job in that brew house, in the brewery down there, in view of wanting me to go to Milwaukee. I said, Mr. Jersey, that's not my cup of tea. I said, I appreciate your offer. I said, I doubt they were schooling me in view of the Lone Star Brewery in Oklahoma City that they built there later. I said, well, that brewery would probably go broke if I was your brewmaster. And my childhood ambition is still in me. He said, God bless you. He said, anything I can do to recommend you. He wrote a very beautiful letter in my behalf to the department. I went into the patrol then, the 13th Highway Patrol School. My first assignment was Pleasanton, Texas. I worked Atascosa County, Bexar County, into Bexar County here, and Wilson County on Highway Patrol. 4.5 years later, I moved to Johnson City to go as a one-man station. The chief asked me in 51, says, Price, would you work at Johnson City Station as a one-man station? I said, yes, sir, I certainly would. Chief, I said, but you know that's my home county. And I thought policy-wise, we were not to be stationed in our home. He says, well, no, I've watched your highway patrol work the last 4 years, and I think you'd give Grandma a hard time up there in Blanco County if she were to violate the law. I said, well, Chief, that's the way I look at it. I remember and tried to practice the 10 general orders of the department very close in my highway patrol years and my ranger years, and one of those general orders is that I shall keep all state equipment entrusted to me in good repair, cleaned and fully accounted for. And I don't recall that any of my equipment in the highway patrol or the rangers ever included a set of scales. I was a highway patrolman, and the license and weight men were the men that had scales to weigh trucks, truck traffic. But mine didn't have a set of scales whereby I weighed a man by his ethnic background, his religious beliefs, his political affiliation, or his social status. And I tried to live by that. And I see young men today, when they ask me something, I try to instill that in their mind. And like I said before, that it was all my childhood ambition, and I feel that I have fulfilled it. I went into the Rangers under Captain A.Y. Alley in 1955, went to the Rio Grande Valley, Willis E. Cameron, Hidalgo, Starr, and Zapata counties, that I worked 18 years under Captain Alley, and up into 74 when I retired. I still held I've done some work for various law firms that represented Consolidated Aluminum. So those years, and I was held a special ranger commission, and still today, on investigation work that I've done for those attorney firms. I've been blessed. How many of you in here are attorneys? There you go. That's a good hand showing. How many are descendants of or have lawmen family? Your dad or your uncle or some son or something? Great. Now, I'm going to say this. Over my 46 years, I have gained, I'm a multimillionaire in good men, attorneys in the law profession, on both sides of the fence. If you've ever sat the saddle next to the judge's bench, sat in the saddle under, with cross-examination under Percy Foreman, cowboy, you know you've been there. Men like him and all down to attorneys that I can name. There's a young one sitting here right now that I just recently, as a executor on a probate proceedings that I was executor on, a young man represented the probate hearings very well. He's a young man. He's one of your members. It's Stephen at Salas back there. I had to write a little note in his book that I gave him because I really like the young man's style. He's young enough to have been my youngest son, my Levi's age, but that young man has a lot on the ball, and like I said, I'm very proud of the men on both sides of the fence in these 46 years that I'm friends with today that are and were attorneys. So when I say that I'm proud of my childhood ambition, it all amounts to this little guy right here. I was a youngster his age when I set my sights on this ranger badge. And right there on the desk are two youngsters on that color picture with me that are Mark. Some of you may know Mark Eidelbach. He's the Mark IV Energy, oil exploration and drilling. Those two came and wanted to have a picture made with me at the Stock Show and Rodeo when we had that Cowboy and Western Heritage tent there, where I appeared with a Royal Mounted Police, Robbie Robertson, who's a retired Mountie. We appeared there, and like I say, when I see those youngsters, those innocent little hearts, walking around and looking up at that Mountie's uniform, and look, I had my rigging on and my badge, and they'll stop and they'll pause and look. It reminds me back when I was a kid. Now, some of you probably remember Johnny Clevenhagen. He was a deputy sheriff, DA investigator in Bexar County in the late 30s. One of our great ranger captains that went into the Rangers in 1941. And Captain Johnny Clevenhagen, when he was Bexar County sheriff's deputy here, Johnny Clevenhagen always had time, to stop and pet a youngster on the head. No matter how tired Johnny was or how many hours he'd had those boots on his feet on the investigation of a case that he'd be working, Johnny always had the time to recognize a youngster. And he did that. He was 12 years older than I was. But when I was in junior high in Breckenridge, while he was a deputy sheriff here in Bexar County, and he always had time for us youngsters to stop and talk to us. So that's what spurred me on. And we, in other words, the Highway Patrol, from the Highway Patrol into the Rangers. In my time, I saw the Rangers come from 62 men, 52 men, which we were when I joined the Rangers under Captain Adley, we were 62. The 61 legislature increased us by 10 men we went to 62. Then, in the late 60s, some of you will recall, I worked the border, Willacy, Cameron, Hidalgo, Starr, and Zapata County, and we had quite a bit of controversy, and anyway, I had a certain eyeball-to-eyeball confrontation one night with one of our state senators, and he didn't particularly like what we were doing and the way we were doing it, he said. Well, I told him, I said, Senator, the Sheriff's Department here and myself, the only tool we got to work with is the statutes that you all come up with, the law that you all make. That's the only tool we got to work with, and if we can't keep law and order and attempts to have righteous situations, well then there's something wrong. Well, the 67 legislature, a bill was introduced, I think Jerome Ehrlich said a while ago, that they tried many times to abolish the Rangers over the 70-some-odd years today. And a bill was introduced to abolish us illiterate, outmoded Texas Rangers in 67 legislature, but it didn't float. The legislature saw fit, instead of abolishing us illiterate, outmoded Texas Rangers, which part of it was all about, saw fit to increase us by 20 men from 62 to 82, with so many men to come on till they'd reached a full complement of 103. And that's what we are today. So if I had my hat on, I'd remove it. The senator really did me a favor, did us all a favor. So you're going to have to kick my feet out of the stirrups here in a minute, young man. I am fortunate that I'm still with the young Rangers today. I consider myself part of Company D yet today. Young Charlie, Captain Haverda, he invites me when we have firearms proficiency every year. So often the young Rangers have to qualify in order to be able to carry their weapon. I've always invited as a special ranger, and Betsy there, the black gun belt. Jerome wanted me to come dressed as the attire that I wore. Well, we dress according to the area you work. And on the border in Willacy, Cameron, Hidalgo, Starr, and Zapata, where I served 18 years, if I came to town with my business suit on, they'd say, hey, what's the matter? El Rinchi there, he's overdosed on peyote or something, he's wearing that. So this is my dress. Wranglers, a white shirt and a black tie. And Betsy strapped on. Of course, when I'd come up here to Dallas, Fort Worth, or San Antonio, I'd put on my suit of clothes and have a coat on over old Betsy over there. She's inactive today because she's a showpiece today, and I brought her. But after she and I leave here this afternoon, she'll be activated again, because nowadays, if you got a law, an oath to uphold to protect the life and the property of the people of the state of Texas, and it happens right under your nose here in a convenience drive-in or wherever it is, I'd hate to have to go up there and explain to Colonel Jim Wilson today, or Colonel Adams before, or Colonel Homer Garrison, say, hey, what was wrong with you when that happened? How come you laid down on the floor when they were told to lay down? Well, you know, I still feel mighty proud of having Betsy. I've had her now over 40 years, that 45 automatic. The World War II commemorative there is something that I got from my two sons. I got two of those World War II commemorative coats. That's the Asian South Pacific Theater. And the Colt Python there, I carried it, that Magnum, I carried it off and on. That will belong to my second daughter, whose husband is U.S. Customs supervisor over all of the drug dog handlers on the border. They're back down in the Rio Grande Valley. I'm very proud of Skip Mahan. He was raised right here in San Antonio, and today he's with the Customs Dog Program, the Canine Corps. So that Python is already his. He's just letting me keep it around with my memorabilia for a while. And I brought this the rifle, the 30-30 with the JHP. That gun goes all the way back to George Durham, Sr., the Durham family in the King Ranch, the El South Division and the Norris Division. The Durhams were under Captain Grandpa George Durham was a ranger under Captain Leander Magnelli. And they had lifetime job. He had a lifetime job with the ranch, the El South Division. And his uncle, Beto Durham, who was a general manager of the El South Division, was a grandson, is the man that presented me with that rifle, Grandpa Durham's rifle. I'm mighty proud of that weapon. It's a 30, Model 94, 30-30 Winchester, Ranger Short Barrel Saddle Rifle, they called it. And it's with pride that I have that hanging on my wall, knowing where it came from and how it came about being with me. And Old Baldy, the one there, the horseback, I was said by Captain in the Eddie Oliver, Houston Company. He says, well, I guess old Geronimo is the last of the horseback rangers down there on that border, and I guess that was true, because my cases of smuggling livestock and what have you on the border, and livestock cases on those big ranches, I had to have a horse very often. And Old Baldy, I had him, he was foaled right here in Blanco County in 1943 when I was gone. Your polo people, some of y'all may have been polo enthusiasts. They always tried to buy, they'd come up to Grandpa Price at Twin Sisters to buy those long yearling coats from him for polo here at Breckenridge Park. They all wanted that flashy stocking-legged, blade-faced sorrel, but Grandpa said, no, that belongs to my son, my grandson. When he comes back home out of the Navy, well, it'll be his. When I got home, Baldy was 2.5 years old. I finished breaking him. He'd been green broke. Mama told me I hadn't been in the saddle in 5 years, and I should not try to attempt Old Baldy, but I had him at a disadvantage. I took him out in Grandpa's plowed field, and it was a disadvantage, but I sure wasn't. I was listening to her that 5 years since I'd been in the saddle. So Old Baldy and I became one. I had him 32 years, 5 months, and 7 days. He's buried on my place down here in Wilson County, and I had to put him to sleep at 32 years, 5 months, and 7 days. His old heart just wasn't going to quit. He was there, always ready to go. If Old Baldy and I were in camp on the river, and I'd hear him go, he's a roller nose ball. When you'd hear him do that, you better look around. You wake up. I worked at night, working smuggling cases, and be in camp in the daytime. If I'd hear Baldy snort, I'd watch him, and he'd be looking. If he was looking over toward the river, I'd look over there, and there'd be one of the foreign exchange students trying to find out where it was the most shallow part of the river. I couldn't refer to them, and I never could. I referred to them as wetbacks. To me, there were always foreign exchange students, and I think that nowadays is more politically correct. And anyway, if Old Baldy was looking somewhere else, you'd see a pack of coyotes or whatever. If he was looking down, then look again, because in that salt grass where I had camp one time, there grew a big old diamondback come out of there. I wished I'd have kept his skin, but I never did care much for those fellows to, you know, skin them or anything, or give them to somebody that did want to skin them. I just eliminate them, and that was it, then leave them. But I was mighty proud of that old gentleman. I had him all those years, and Captain Alley one time said, if you ever heard Captain Alley talk, he said, you're wrong, you still got old Baldy. I said, yes, sir, Cap, I sure do. He said, I guess if you ain't careful, that old horse won't outlive you. Now, are there any questions? Since I've rambled on like I have, I told you I wasn't a speaker, I'm a talker. And, oh yeah, I did want to mention this, as to what, when the One Ride, One Ranger, that got worldwide acclaim. But I've seen the time when it was awful comforting to me to see out of the corner of my eyes that I had another ranger accompanying me when we went into certain skirmishes, you know. And then the one that I really loved as a kid was coined by Captain Bill McDonald in Brownsville in 1905. Said, no man in the wrong can stand up against a fellow who's in the right and keeps on coming. I liked that one. Yet my cohorts nowadays, and some of the rangers of the last three decades that when you say, do you know Ranger, did you know Ranger Jerome Price? These youngsters will say, oh, you mean old Geronimo. There's a little humorous story behind how I got that name Geronimo off of Captain Alley. But what I was going to say, I've always said, the way I believe about these youngsters, and that my life hasn't been in, my childhood ambition hasn't been in vain. When I look at little guys like Matthew and Mark Idlebach's two little ones sitting on my knee at the stock show and rodeo with the picture they wanted with me, it hasn't been in vain for me to have done what I did. And my saying was, the past is our heritage, the present is our duty, and the future is our responsibility. And when I say that, I'm thinking of my granddaughters, my four little granddaughters, and their children someday. I'm thinking of your children, your grandchildren, as to what they should have to be proud of. And this little guy right here is one of them. And like I said, mine is, the past is our heritage, the present is our duty, and the future is our responsibility. Now, gentlemen, it's been a real pleasure. I wish that I could know each one of you personally, because that would add a lot more to the treasures that I feel that I have, as good acquaintances through my years of being with courts and the judges and the Bar Association and gentlemen like you all. Thank you. Now, if there has any questions, I'll try to answer them. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard a legend. I have on the first table there in display a copy of his last year, I think May or so, Texas Monthly, a very lengthy article. I know Bob Dean, the program chairman, had read it when he authorized this program to honor the Texas Rangers. Jerome Price is listed as one of the five old cusses who had a way of persuading confessions, and that was before Miranda, right, Jerome? But he's going down in Ranger legendary history by the mere mention of him with four other colleagues in that article. These gentlemen over here introduced work actively with the Former Texas Rangers Association, which Jerome is a past president. And Bob Dale goes back many days with me to the old Express News, the featured cartoonist, editorial cartoonist, and is renowned in the lore of the Rangers and Western memorabilia, etc. So we're pleased to have you with us today, gentlemen, and hope that if there are any questions of anybody too shy to ask in public, would come up and view the exhibits and talk to some of these people. Jerome, it's hard to know what to get. A Ranger's got everything. We thought about it, and we've got a book that Adrian and I personally want to give to you. It's called A Texas Pioneer by August Santlaben, who was not a Ranger, but it was edited by Isaac Dunbar, Affleck, who was in Terry's Texas Rangers, 8th Cavalry, CSA. But this has the whole Bear District, all the contiguous counties carved out of that district, the names of all the settlers. It has a lot of the legend and lore of the development of San Antonio and Medina County particularly, and lots of old Ranger stories and names in here. So it's with a pleasure that we give this to Jerome number one, from Jerome number two, and Adrian joins me in that. Now, I'm going to ask Jean Ann to come, the purple jacket, to come up. Glendora Stanish, who likes to delve a little bit into a little artwork and all, and met you and your wife out at the tent out there at the stock show in February, where this all kind of took place, that we thought enough of your stories to invite you to come today. Glendora has fashioned for you Texas Ranger Company D and a Texas flag. It's fragile. Thank you, and I'll turn it back to Mike Patterson.
Thank you, Jerome and Jerome. I had one question. That's right. I wonder if the Texas Rangers Baseball Club ever had to get permission from the Texas Rangers to use that.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was just curious about that. Not that important. It's just
asking about women Rangers.
Are there women Texas, female Texas Rangers? Uh-oh. That may be another hour.
I'm not going to comment like some of
there's some
men.
Articles on the table over there.
Well, Barbara's not here today anyway, so
then. Some fine young ladies. And the one we have right here in San Antonio, she's a natural as far as an officer's concerned. Yeah. That's Maury Garcia. Her husband is with the city PD here. And I knew it was coming. I mean, this is 1995, not 1895, you know, so. I knew it would have to come one of these days, but so be it. I mean, it brings out things that I want to say. When I said a while ago that I was writing myself in the remembering our policies of DPS. And that the article in the Texan Monthly, I told the one young man who's a movie star ranger, I told him, I said, your mouth reminds me of a malfunctioning standard transmission. It goes into gear long before the gears, it starts in movement long before the gears between your brain and your mouth are synchronized. So the general order that I'm talking about, that I recall from 1948, to qualify as a voter, vote my convictions on all political issues and political questions, but to take no active part in public politics or grant interviews or make statements for publication that could affect the future actions of the Texas Department of Public Safety. I learned that one in 1948, and that one about my equipment. So I told Joaquin, I said, Joaquin, I bet you wish the next day you could have retracted some of those little things that you said when you read it.
All right. Jerome, we're very happy that you came here and all the things that are of interest over here and that your presentation. Kiwanians, we live by the golden rule, and we try to. We'd like to present you with your own golden rule to remember your day here at the Kiwanis.
Your partner, this is an honor.
Thank you very
Another
much.
Another honor. Thank you, partner.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it. Thank y'all.
And before you get away, there's one more function that we have all of our speakers do, and that's to draw the kitty, winner of the kitty.
That's
absolutely. So
there'll be a winner sitting out there, right?
Well, maybe. We'll
there
find out.
There you go.
What number we got? 45?
Yeah.
All right. Jess Miller? Jess, where are you? All right. Win the kitty for 2 weeks in a row here. You didn't win it 2 weeks, but this is 2 weeks of kitty here.
Wow.
Yeah. Not this. This is the kitty.
Wow.
They said this was an easy job. $21.35.
This is the kitty, right?
All right, sir. Thank you very much again.
All right.
If there's nothing else, don't forget, next Friday, no meeting. If you come here, you'll be by yourself. Otherwise, we're adjourned.
Thanks,
you all. Thanks, Bob. Thank you.
Wonderful talk.
Thank you. We will see you then after tomorrow. Jeff, thanks.
I started it and Charlie and Kimber was getting a little
Yeah, you need to stop here.